This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 23. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
0208 816 7691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Lawrence Houghton. Well, welcome to the show, Garras, and a very special welcome to a special guest this week, Lawrence Houghton. How's it going, Lawrence?
Hi there, how are you going? Yeah, all good.
Excellent. And Lawrence, you have been mentioned many times on the show before, and of course you've come on as an interviewee to talk about your research into batting in Western Australia, in Perth. There.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. I'm still lurking down in the Southern Hemisphere, but hopefully don't be fooled by my accent if you get confused. I'm definitely English.
It's kind of up and down. It's one of those accents where sometimes you think it's Australian and then another time you think it's completely English. So you haven't.
That's right. I'm a confused person.
Yeah. When were you last in Perth, Garris?
Oh, crikey. When was that? That was probably 2007, I think, the last time I was in Perth. And we lost in a test match and lost in one day. So it wasn't one of our better places to go. But a great spot, Perth. Fantastic. And we've always sent cricketers over there from all the organisations that I've been involved with because, you know, it's proper tough cricket. And anybody who goes over there and scores runs and takes wickets, they come back with a renewed confidence that they take into the season and generally do well. So fantastic spot for cricket.
And speaking of cricket, we've got the Champions Trophy going on at the moment. So I wanted to get some of the team's views on what's happening with the Champions Trophy and what we can learn from it as players and coaches. So, Gareth, you've been keeping your eye on it. It's been quite exciting, hasn't it?
It has. There's been some serious batting going on and a couple of really low-scoring games. So it's been a real balanced affair, isn't it? I've really enjoyed the New Zealand-Sri Lanka game just for the mental side of a game as much as anything because the wicket wasn't going around absolutely everywhere. You know, and to lose 19 wickets to get 260-odd runs was fantastic viewing for us sitting at home watching it on the television and probably nail-biting stuff for both teams and both sets of coaches. But overall, I've been really impressed with the way that the batting sides in particular have dealt with the power plays and dealt with the new playing regulations. And it's been great to see the likes of India in particular take advantage of that all through their warm-up games and into the competition itself.
Now, Lawrence, you've got a vested interest in the way that people bat in power plays because of your batting system, haven't you?
I guess so, yeah. I mean, how do you, I guess the idea is, I mean, how do you make the most of them? And how do you set up training, I guess, is a good way to answer the question. How do you set up training to make the most of power plays?
And that's where BATX comes in, isn't it? It's it does set up training so you can have a net session where you are thinking about the power plays and the way that the field is set and the way that you're going to try and score runs in those situations.
Yeah, I guess it's all about creating an environment, isn't it, where you're not just standing there and hitting balls, but actually getting yourself in the mindset of what you'll actually be doing in a game. So when you're there, you've already, if you like, rehearsed your tactics through your mind as well, not just your technique.
And Gareth, you use power plays in your school games?
Yeah, we do actually. We do our best to replicate the ODI regulations when we play in the 50-over stuff. And in 2020, I think we'll probably come onto that, and you know, because it's a national competition, so we're playing the old regulations with five men out. But obviously, right, you still have that 6-over power play at the start, which is absolutely crucial. And last year, when we won the T20 Nationals, we had a really good consistent opening partnership that would get us to sort of 40-50 for one or no wicket, which gave us a great foundation by taking advantage of that power play. And we found that most of the runs in that last year's season came in the first half of the innings, and when the ball got softer and when people took pace off the ball, it became more difficult to score at accelerated rates. So the power play was hugely important last year.
And it has it has changed things quite dramatically, hasn't it? With teams looking now towards keeping wickets in hand towards the back end, and then seeing how many they can score in the last 10 or so overs, right, Gareth?
Yeah, it has. It's changed the way that the teams set themselves up in the first 10. So, you know, you're not seeing so many scores of 60 for one or 60 for two anymore. You're seeing more scores around the 45 to 50 mark, and ideally for naught or one down at the end of 10 overs. And equally, you're seeing less of a push in those middle overs. And it's also impacted on selection, because people are backloading their teams now. And there's a lot of discussion around players like Josh Butler and whether he should bat higher. But I think his position in the team is placed specifically to take advantage, A, of the last power play, but more importantly than that, the last few overs of an innings. And I've always been critical of loading players too low down, because often the game's done by them. But I'm now having to review my views on that because of regulation changes and because of the way that sides have gone about utilising their big hitters at 7 and 8 as opposed to getting them in at 5 and 6, which would have been more prevalent in the previous regulations.
Yeah, that's an interesting area, isn't it? Because I guess now that tail enders are able to work a lot harder on their batting, they're able to hang around for longer and score more runs as well. They can support the big hitter, even if he does come in a little bit later on.
Yeah, it does, because if you're sticking your big guns down at 7 and 8, obviously there's a reliance on 9, 10 and 11 to be able to manipulate the ball, to be able to get the ball into gaps, to be able to score themselves to support that person, because there's no point in backloading your player if you've got, you know, to number 7 or 8 and then have three bunnies sitting behind him, because that's going to put him under pressure to play differently than he would do, and you've picked him in there to go out and bang it from, you know, two or three balls in. So absolutely right, and you're seeing that, aren't you, in some of the selections of teams now. You've got a good batter at 7 and 8, and then they will maybe pick somebody who's a similar type of bowler but a better batter to play, rather than maybe playing a guy who can't bat. And I think it's going to change the way that sides go about selection, and that's right and proper. I mean, the reasons why they bring these regulations in is to try and spruce up 50 over cricket, because around the world the attendances have been dropping massively, and also the television viewing figures have been dropping massively. And I'll be interested in a year or so's time to review those two sets of figures to see whether this new regulation of three men out in power play and having generally four men out for the most of the innings is going to kick things on and get people watching the game again. It's certainly got my interest, and it will be interesting to see whether it's gone across the world.
Just pick on that. This is going off a bit of a tangent. But the other night I was out with some mates, and we just, you know, how random topics come up. And obviously, yeah, talking about one-day cricket and how that's kind of certainly been on the back burner. Well, that's what everyone's saying anyway over the past years. It's a common thing that people are bringing up. Here's something. I don't know how it quite worked out. We hadn't worked out how this might work, but it's one of those things, you know, that comes up sometimes when you throw out random ideas. How about combining? How would this look? Help me out. How would it look to combine a test match, and within the test match combine a 2020? This is really random, okay? I don't know, we didn't finish thinking it through, so I'm just going to chuck it out there now.
Yeah, go for it.
How would it look? I mean, could you have some sort of, you have one kind of afternoon where the 2020 is kind of linked into the test match, and it's totally obscure, totally left field. But I don't know. I don't know.
Would it be the same 11 players that start the test match have to play the 2020, or could you bring in specialists into that?
I reckon you have to keep it the same. It came off the back of, you know, it was brought up last week, you know, about the women's Ashes. So they're playing, they're contending it over the three formats.
Yeah.
So into a point. So then that's what drilled the drawer. The discussion was, well, how about, you know, you actually just combine it into the one game? How would that look?
Okay, so while we ponder that one, and I think there's going to be a lot of pondering going on with that one, and possibly some teeth gnashing as well, let's head over to the newsroom for this week's Pitch Vision headlines.
England's fastest Pitch Vision bowler spot has been snatched this week by Dan 113. The 18-year-old who bowls at the Cricket Asylum facility in West Yorkshire averages a nippy 104 kilometres per hour, with a top speed of over 139 kilometres per hour. In New Zealand, pitch vision ball tracking sensors have been installed permanently under the new service at the Taranaki Cricket Association. Coaches are now able to track performance at all age groups, with a record of every ball bowled alongside video analysis. 25,000 people have viewed an LBW appeal video on Pitch Vision Interactive to decide if it was out or not. The viral video has generated a range of opinions which are posted in the comments, from serious to flippant, as the community agree to disagree. Pitch Vision podcast panellist Mark Garraway was accused this week of sounding practically identical to Nasser Hussain. Pitch Vision linguistic expert The Boss said that the comparison between the Pitch Vision host and the Sky Sports voice clearly established that they may in fact be the same person, possibly. For more details on these stories, check out the show notes at pitchvision.com. That's the Pitch Vision news for this week.
Okay, time now for the question section on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. And of course, as you know, every week we have two questions. The best of the questions from the mailbag wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So in the absence of Berners, who's been called away at the last minute, I have the questions here in front of me. And the first of those is from Cups, who is a regular correspondent to the show. And Cups says, how do us fast bowlers keep our knees and ankles happy during the season while we play 2 to 3 games a week with our training amongst that? So it sounds like he's doing a lot of playing and he hasn't got a lot of recovery time. Gareth, what do you reckon?
Well, one of the things that we've got in England that has come in the last couple of years has been some sort of a guideline formula for how much you should bowl in any given week. And it's called the 7-4-2. So in every 7-day period, you should bowl no more than 4 times and never more than 2 days on the bounce. And one of the challenges that we have in this country is managing workloads. We talk a lot about strength and conditioning on the show, and obviously there's a lot of information out there on that. For example, Steph Jones's courses and many others that you can pick up through the site. But actually adhering to workload guidelines is really, really important. And we're finding that the more that we can manage people's bowling workloads actual in-game and also then outside of the game in their preparation, the better. So an example of that would be if you do have somebody bowling 2 days on the trot, say you've got a 20-20 and then a 50-over game, so it might have bowled 14 overs in 2 days, you know, either get them to do have a complete recovery day the next day, so they're fresh, or if you do want to do some technical work, then get them doing it off 2-3 paces rather than trying to compete against the batter at the other end. So just manage people through, and that will help knees and that will help ankles. And obviously we can do strength and conditioning and all of those things that we talk about a lot, but unless you're actually managing the workload when people are going at 100% of full tilt, then you're always going to have creaking bones and be prone to injury. We do know that if a bowler bowls any more than 3 weeks on the bounce, bowling more than 30 overs, that they are 75% or above more likely to pick up an injury in that fourth week.
Yeah, that's an interesting stat. Lawrence, you've worked with bowlers. How do you manage their knees and ankles?
Yeah, coming off the back of what Gareth has said as well, I've worked as strength and conditioning coach at Ace Cricket Academy in Perth the last 4 or 5 years now, and probably longer now, actually 6 even. And I agree with the workload thing, and I know where the heart, if you like, or the spirit of that is coming from, and I agree with it. But also, I guess there's always a flip side, and certainly young, I think what they should be is guidelines, but I think a lot of juniors are taking them as, you know, okay, I bowled my 7 overs today or 10 overs or whatever their limit is. You know, it's basically saying to the coach, I'm not bowling anymore. So I think they're definitely there as guidelines. But what I was going to say is that over the years I've seen, I think people's general fitness and especially in cricket was not so much strength and fitness background, you know, obviously compared to sports like football and rugby and stuff like that, where they're actually being conditioned and taught how to manage their body from a lot earlier age. I think I find a lot of young guys coming through to our academy have got less of a foundation, and that's probably a massive factor as well in terms of picking up overuse injuries. And but yeah, other than that, I guess a great one as well, which we do as well, is instead of as a recovery session using your pool, and if you using jogging lengths rather than, you know, swimming, take some load off your joints that way is a good way to do it.
You mentioned foundation there. That's a really important point. I think a lot of this kind of work is done in the off season. You don't want to wait until you're in the middle of a season and when you're playing a lot of games to decide that you want to make sure that you're doing your injury prevention work. You know, you've got to lay the foundation before the season starts. You know, deep in the winter, especially in the UK when it's, you know, snowing and it's hard to. You know, it's hard to motivate yourself for something that's going to be happening in 6 months' time or, you know, 4 months' time. That's the time you have to put the real hard.
Oh, for sure. I think you can tell a character of a player. This is one thing. That you see at the academy as well. You can tell a character of a player by how well they stretch. How well, you know, we often had a session. We'll have a session once a week where I expect the guys to go off and do their own stretch routine. You know, I'm not going to take everyone through that all the time. Go through it once is what you need to do. I expect you to do it 3 times a week, you know, in your own time. There is a set time where we can do it as a group, and it's interesting noting the players that, you know, take it seriously. There's other people just sit around and have a chat, but those, you know, who are focused and switched on, and says a lot about them, I think, as a player, in how they stretch and manage that. So yeah, getting that locked into your routine is crucial.
I like that. That's something I've not heard before. But actually, when I'm as you were saying it, I was thinking back to players that I've worked with in the past, and how religious they've then become towards stretching and their prehab and all of those things. Yeah, that's a pretty good point, that, Lawrence. And I'll back you up on that one. A question I'm going to ask is going back to a workloads thing. Is in England now we've gone away from limiting bowlers at 7 overs and those sort of things, and gone more to the 7-4-2. So the instance of bowling rather the volume of bowling on any one given day. And the reason why we've done that, and that may differ, so please tell me if it differs in Australia, but we did that, is because bowlers weren't able to finish spells off. So for example, you know, if a youngster's got 4 for spit and he's bowled his 7 overs, then he would come off. And, you know, we want to develop cricketers that learn how to dominate games, that get fifers, because that's the thing that's going to get them recognised. And we ultimately want them to go on and do in test cricket rather than, oh, well bowled, you know, fantastic. Now you've got to watch for the next 25 overs. And so that was something that has been a huge shift over here, which has only happened in the last 3 years. So that's why we went to the 7-4-2, as opposed to having, for example, under 17, you can only bowl 7 overs or whatever the case. Is that the same over with you, Lawrence, or is it still a guideline that's in place over in Australia?
Yeah, it's still more of a guideline. I was back in the UK last summer working over there, and that's when I first started to hear about what was going on. And I think it's a good way to think about it. And adding as well is in terms of, okay, stretching, but I was just thinking about your injury prevention stuff as well. Lots of different things you can integrate within, you know, they only take up a 2 or 3 minutes at the start of a session or when you're hanging around between activities at training, that you can get into to look after your knees and your ankles.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're talking about responsibility there. I think that it is important that bowlers should know where their areas are that are not quite so up to speed as they should be. I mean, for example, you know, if you know that your ankle mobility isn't that great, you know, that's an area that you should be taking responsibility to work on to help prevent injuries either with the ankles or further up the chain, because the ankle can affect the hip, can affect the shoulder even, because it's all linked together, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'll I'll shamelessly get a plug in here. I'm actually getting out in the next couple of weeks my top 20 injury prevention exercises for cricket. It's actually linking into the Batex campaign I'm running at the moment to try and get the phone app made for that. So, I can leave details later on if you want.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about that, the whole Batex thing later on. So, yeah, we'll get information on those injury prevention exercises. There's one other thing I wanted to say about this, which was, Gareth, as you mentioned, recovery days, which are very important things, but it's also important to know what you're doing on a recovery day. What's the type of thing that you encourage Gareth in a player to do on a day when they're not bowling?
Well, obviously you can go down the lines of, you know, stretching and ice baths and all of those things. But to me, they're more sort of an immediate thing after an event. One of the things that I think works better than anything else is to get them away from the game completely, to go and do something else, to maybe go for a swim somewhere or to play some golf or do something different. We used to call that, and it's a Ponzi term, but we used to quite enjoy these days with England, active recovery. So instead of just doing nothing and lying on a sun lounger or whatever, actually getting away and doing something that's relatively physical, you know, like walking 6K around a golf course is doing that, but keeping the body ticking over, but not necessarily relating it to either a training day or to a cricket related exercise. So yeah, active recovery was a bit of a buzzword with us, and it always meant that we could get off to the golf course, which was a good thing.
That's good. Yeah, the other thing as well is coming off that is being confident enough to have a day off. Especially, you know, you're working so hard, you're just so obsessed perhaps with trying to improve your game and take it forward. But, you know, backing your ability, knowing that, you know, taking a couple of days off isn't going to, you know, throw you back, you know, years of work. It's, you know, okay, taking a couple of days off is actually going to help you. And,
I think that's a really, really valid point, because there are, you know, almost 50% of the population need repetition, but more importantly, the other 50% of the population need quality. And we all know that if people are doing stuff day in on day, then they get fatigued and then their quality drops. So I completely endorse that, and it's something, a message I always give young players is to know that actually it's okay not to do something on a given day.
Yeah, Vern Gambetta, who's sort of the father of the functional training movement, always says you can't make yourself in a day, but you can break yourself in a day.
Yeah, I think that's a great adage, that.
So yeah, taking a rest is definitely a good thing. Let's move on to the next question. And this is from Ashu. And Ashu says, I'm a good defensive player, but I'm not able to bat aggressively and score runs faster. Please help me. So that's a desperate call. Lawrence, this might be a good time to talk a little bit about Batex.
Yeah, so, I mean, Batex, I'm sure you mentioned on the program before, but just to give a quick overview, it helps simulate scoring a one-day 100 in cricket. Essentially, it's a bit like a beep test for those who've had unfortunate or fortunate to do it, depending on how you look at it, to do a beep test, a fitness test. It essentially combines batting in the nets with a beep test, so it takes your mind off the hard stuff and makes you run. But coming on to your question here, Ashu, is I guess the key thing it will do is it makes you go through the actual timings of a match. So rather than just sitting in a net and hitting balls continuously, it instructs you and takes you through a simulated innings. So it, you know, you have 35 seconds between balls. So that in that time you can actually practice your concentration routines. So yeah, you say you're a good defensive player, and that might be as well that you're very keyed up and diligent, I guess, in being technically correct, which is great. But I guess one of the drawbacks of the net mindset is just getting so caught up in your technique that you forget actually how to play cricket, enjoy the moment, and again tactically respond to different situations. So yeah, Batex has six different matching situations that you can run through and get your head into that. So not taking away your technical game, but having sessions where you actually, okay, not touch out your technique out the window, but you stop thinking about it completely. And again, the field settings there can help you actually try and hit areas as well, rather than just be scared of getting out, I guess, as well. So, yeah.
Shifts mindset. Gareth, where are you with helping a defensive player bat aggressively?
Yeah, I'll probably go very tactically on it. So, I mean, it's a common one, isn't it? Particularly in younger age groups where you've got good technical players and good technically defensive players. And how can you actually start to score runs? So an example would be to walk down the wicket and play a conventional cricket shot. Two things happen. You put a bit of pace onto the ball anyway because you're meeting it further up the pitch. And secondly, you're also further up the pitch anyway. So in terms of hitting it to the left and right or even straight out of mid-off, you can push people for one. So aggression doesn't necessarily always mean smacking it over the top of a fielder. Aggression can be, intent as I'd rather call it, can be just scoring runs. And by coming down the wicket, I encourage people to come down the wicket a lot. Come straight down the wicket, play a conventional shot from further up the pitch, pick up your ones by putting pressure on mid-off and mid-on in particular. And then also to move around the crease, and I don't mean away from the stumps, but generally I mean by getting yourself across outside the line of off stump or onto off stump, where you can hit the same line of ball into a more vacant leg side field. And it sounds really basic, but most bowlers that you'll ever face in a game of cricket will have more people on the offside than on the leg side, and so you can have more gaps to hit, whether it be for ones, for twos or fours. The key thing is that you keep scoring ball percentage high and you keep scoring the scoreboard ticking over. So by getting yourself and coming down or getting across your stumps and opening up like a Peterson would do, or many of the players that we're watching in the ICC trophy at the moment, get yourself across, open up the onside, knock it into the onside with various bits of power, and you'll always pick up runs. So they're the two ways that I would encourage them. And then obviously in your practice sessions outside of match play, look to try and develop a couple of boundary options. And there's very few players in the world now that can score 360 boundary options all the way around the pitch. It doesn't work like that. Every player has got two, maybe three, if they're lucky, signature boundary options that they hit. So choose the areas that you like. If you've got a decent pull, but it hasn't got much power at the moment, keep working at it. You know, see if you can bang it in front of the square so you don't have to hit it, you know, over the ropes for six. But if you get it 20, 30 yards in front of the square, then you're going to pick up your boundaries. So give that a go. Maybe if you've got a decent pull, look to try and get it finer and get it up over the top of short, fine leg or whatever. But you only need two or three options. And somebody like Steve Waugh was a classic example of that, you know, who ended up topping all of the run stats at year in, year out around the world, and he effectively had three shots, but he made sure that they were super shots.
Would the back loading concept come into this anywhere?
Yeah, it could do. I mean, it's something that requires a lot of practice and probably needs somebody who understands it to work with you to initially sell you that concept. And but by, you know, stepping further back in the crease and loading all your weight onto your back leg, and then to unleash that in a similar way to a baseball player would do, has been pretty successful for the players that I've worked with. And and it's something that I now see guys just go into, not just at the end of an innings, but also throughout the innings, where they fancy a bowler or where they want to release the pressure. So it's a good option. But I think with somebody who's more defensively minded, using their feet up the pitch, getting into positions further up the pitch and getting positions across into off stump are actually really good starting points to increase your scoring ball percentage and increase your strike rate, which ultimately will give you confidence to start to do things like backloading in the long run.
And I think the common thread with both of those answers is that we're talking about changing the mindset and changing the mentality from going, okay, I don't want to get out here, to, okay, how can I score here? And it's tricky
exactly
yourself
right.
doing that, isn't it?
And also being really strategic about it. So rather than tricking, let's have a plan about it. Mm. You know, let's go, right, this is what I am. I'm a good defensive player. I'm presently struggling to score. How can I use my present strengths by manipulating myself around the pitch or telling my brain that I'm going to start to use my strengths as a scoring option to increase your opportunities to pick up runs all around the pitch? And, you know, we've seen many players do it. You've only got to watch Jonathan Trott bat in one day cricket. And I know he comes up under heaps of stick, but he would be one of the first people on my team list every single week, because he does it consistently and he does it in a way where he accumulates and he gets 50, 60 and you're going, hang on a minute, I can only remember two or three shots. that is an example for this guy to follow.
Okay, time for this week's soapbox. Mark Garraway is climbing up onto it as we speak, and he has 60 seconds to rant about anything he likes without interruption or without hesitation. So, Garraz, your time starts now.
I'm going to tell you about one of my bizarre cricket dreams, and I'm sure that other people have them as well, but it's influenced the way that I then coach, which has been interesting in the last few years. So my dream is that we're on overseas tour. I'm with Hampshire, and Mark Nicholas, and our commentator, is 99 not out, and for some reason I'm batting number 11, and he's 99 not out, and the ninth wicket falls, and there I am. I can't find my kit, I can't find my pads, and I'm struggling to get to a wicket in time, and I'm going to get given out, timed out, which will leave Mark Nicholas, my captain, and superstar on 99 not out, and I'll probably never get picked again. So that's one of my dreams, and what it's told me is that preparation is absolutely crucial. And I get really annoyed with our kids at school if they're not ready to bat. And where I mean ready to bat, that they've got their pads on, that they're already planning their innings, that they're watching what's going on, and then they can walk out to a middle and be successful, whether their captain's on 99 on the other end or not.
Okay, that is the end of the show this week, and a great thanks to Lawrence Houghton for guesting on the show this week. Great to have you along, Lawrence.
Thanks for having me.
And before we go, we just have to decide on the winner of this week's competition. So a couple of questions that had plenty of discussion. We had Cups' question about fast bowling injury prevention, and Ashu's question about batting aggressively when you're defensive-minded. So which one did you prefer, Garraz?
Cups, I'm going to be really harsh because I know we've given you a course before, so I'm going to go for the other one this week about defensive batting and how to change mindsets and change tactics to score runs. So I apologise, Cups, keep your questions coming in because I can't penalise you more than once for just being a great listener.
Yeah, exactly. Keep sending them in, Cups, and well done, Ashu. A prize is going to be winging its way to you as soon as you get in touch with us and tell us what you want. Now, Garraz, if somebody wanted to get in touch with the show and have their question answered and get their chance to win the prize, what would they need to do?
They could give us a call on 0208 816 7691 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, indeed. You can find us on Twitter at PV Cricket Coach, and we have a Facebook page, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, where we're posting videos up there, including Pitch Vision videos from Lawrence's Academy, Ace Academy over there. Lawrence, if somebody wanted to find out more about BatX and the apps that you're developing for various mobile devices, what would they need to do?
A couple of sites, but the main one is BatXBattingTips.com. B-A-T-E-X, BattingTips.com. And there'll be links that will go there to take you on to various things. So, yeah.
And we'll link to that in the show notes as well. So anybody who's listened to this without a pen handy, then head over to pitchvision.com/academy. You'll find the show notes there. You can subscribe to this show if you want to listen every week. And you can do that by heading to iTunes. Do a search for Pitch Vision Academy and you'll find us in there. Or you can go back to pitchvision.com/academy. And you can subscribe in any podcast downloading device that you like. Using our RSS feed, which is available in the podcast link at the top in the green bar. That's all for this week. So until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Garraz. Cheers, Lawrence.
Cheers, guys.
See ya.